This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Wednesday, the 16th of April. I'm Stuart Lohman, sitting in for regular hosts Alec Hogg and Bronwyn Nielsen. Our top story, Saakalege is seeking a court order to force President Cyril Ramaphosa and his cabinet to take direct responsibility for the recovery of the failing Ditsobotla municipality in the northwest. After the provincial government failed to step in and save the municipality, Saakalege CEO Piet le Roux commented on whether the national government can bring about meaningful change.
Well, unfortunately, the evidence so far points to the lack of will, the lack of capability also with the national executive. More than two years ago, in November 2022, was the last time President Cyril Ramaphosa visited that town. And I've watched some clips recently. He's on record for saying that the town is taken over by criminals. He's promising that the town will have a fit and proper municipality by 14 December, which was like 3 weeks after that speech he made. Nothing's happened. Now, this isn't the only town in the country that's failing. It isn't the only state-owned entity that's failing. It isn't the only department that isn't complying with what it should do. So, unfortunately, the evidence points to a president and a cabinet failing to maintain a capable state, one sufficiently capable to recover a municipality. So, it's quite possible that this court case and this order does not bring what is necessary, which is why we're also asking the court to keep the papers open so that in the event that the president and the cabinet fail once more in taking up their duty, then we will proceed to ask the court for further relief. And that takes us into uncharted waters because the constitutional provisions only go explicitly as far as saying the president and the cabinet should intervene. That is both this takes us into unknown legal territory, which has its risks, but also its opportunities. And we will seize a Saakalege on that. And I think the people of towns across this country will seize on that new legal terrain to develop the jurisprudence by which businesses and communities themselves must intervene. Because we cannot sit idly by and let towns go to waste and people's lives be in danger just because the state fails in doing what it should.
So would that last legal recourse then involve the private sector stepping in to perform what government has failed to do? Would it give them the authority then to do so?
Well, not by itself, but in case of emergencies, as we will now see develop when the president and if the president and his cabinet prove impotent in doing what they should be doing in Ditsobotla, then it is inevitable that the help will have to come from somewhere else. And help can only come from people with capital and means and energy. And so it will be some kind of combination of the businesses in these towns together with the various communities finding ways to tackle the largest problems, the most urgent problems, the most pressing ones, and the ones with the best chance of getting solved with the means they have available.
You can get the full interview on BizNews TV on YouTube. Attorney Martin Hood has slammed proposed new gun control regulations as a threat to public safety. Speaking to BizNews journalist Chris Stain, he says the government sees the private security industry as a threat and explains why their suspicion is misplaced.
They do, but it's completely unjustified. The private security industry is not going to be the spearhead of a revolution in this country. It actually stopped that in July of 2021. But for the security industry, the effect of the riots would have been far, far worse. The police were very slow to respond. And we all saw private security at shopping centers stopping the riots. We saw private security in the middle of the riots trying to stop it. So no way. That's a complete misconception on the part of government. And what we also need to bear in mind is at ground level, every single reputable security service provider has to and does work hand in hand with the police. They provide a tremendous amount of resources to the police. They work with the police in operations. They provide vehicles. They support police stations even. Not one of the service providers that's come to me has anything bad to say about the police on ground level where they work with them. This is why these proposals seem so wrong, because they don't take into account what happens on the ground.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the Sunday Show with Neil De Beer, the UAM president discussed US President Donald Trump's boycotting of the upcoming G20 summit to be held in South Africa over what Trump refers to as land repossession, land confiscation, and genocide. De Beer also comments on EFF Commander-in-Chief Julius Malema's description of the US president as a tariff-wielding barbarian who will be lucky to still be president come the summit in November.
When you meet a moron and this person says to you, there's a certain value, you look at that and you go, take it from whom it comes. I mean, that jumping little jelly toit in his orange little sliver is definitely none persona non grata in anybody's mind anymore. I mean, this guy, really, do we still take Frikkie Julius Malema serious? I mean, he promised that he will build one school and get into power. He couldn't find the address. Nonsense. Chris, may I read, because I don't want to get it wrong, the tweet on Twitter on X from Donald J. Trump, posted 11 April at 1747. How could we be expected to go to South Africa for the very important G20 meeting when land confiscation and genocide is the primary topic of conversation? They are taking the land of white farmers and then killing them and their families. The media refuses to report on this. The United States has held back all contributions to South Africa. Is this where we want to be for a G20? I don't think so. From Donald J. Trump.
How accurate is that statement, Neil?
According to international fact, the minute genocide is agreed, that genocide is adopted, the world, according to its statutory legal representation, must go, and they have to intervene. Chris, the word genocide of white farmers in this country, if you take it as I have just mentioned, is not according to the normal framework of the word genocide. What is genocide? We can't say. Is it 100,000? Is it 1 million? Is it like in Germany, 6 million? It is a sad day. We have to put numerics to life. But they are refusing to accept in the UN principle the word genocide coupled to people in South Africa. And that is a very, very harsh word, a legal word, and a controversial word. And that's why we have the football, Chris, of this word called white genocide. According to the Rwanda statistic, there is not a genocide of white people in this country. What there is a very clear murder rate that is unacceptable, not just on the farming community, not just on the white community, but South Africans in general, more than 80 a day. So Donald Trump is now using the word genocide. the American government is recognizing in a tweet. They are referring to this as a genocide. So what begs the answer, Chris, to close this subject, is if so, and the United States of America is acknowledging, even if it is in written format from its leadership, that there's a genocide in this country, why is there not a huge UN and American delegation in South Africa with immediate effect to do an analysis and a on-ground fact-finding mission? Because I hear that lately. Fact-finding missions in foreign countries is now the thing to do, even if it's even if it's quiet. So I say, if such things are being mentioned, it is the norm. You send a world delegation here and they do an investigation. And I think it's time now that this must be done so that we can get this continual scenario of Donald Trump and us over and done with.
Political scientist R.W. Johnson pulled no punches in his latest BizNews Premium column, using Thabo Mbeki's recent Durko speech to dissect South Africans' foreign policy failures. In this short clip, Johnson unpacks how Mbeki's support for Robert Mugabe helped stifle Zimbabwe's democratic rebirth and left South Africa with the fallout.
Mbeki's initiative to change the OAU into the African Union didn't really achieve anything. All the old faults of the OAU have remained with the AU. Moreover, at the time, Mbeki was clearly aiming at South African leadership of the whole continent. That too hasn't fared well. But the greatest failure was over Zimbabwe. When Mugabe lost his constitutional referendum in 2000, Zimbabwe was ripe for a democratic transition after 20 years of authoritarian rule by Mugabe. All the polls I conducted in Zimbabwe between 2000 and 2008 uniformly showed a large majority for the MDC, but that party was never allowed to win. To prevent that, Mugabe used torture, murder, intimidation, and straightforward rigging. But the only reason that he was able to get away with that was Mbeki's decision to support him to the hilt. This decision was based on the usual Mbeki paranoia, that the forces of imperialism were planning to overthrow first Mugabe and then all the ruling Southern African liberation movements. This was a huge act of self-harm. Had Mbeki allowed democracy to have its way, Zimbabwe could have been reborn. As it was, the democratic impulse was brutally stifled, and Zimbabwe today is a failed state run by gangsters. South Africa lost one of its most important trading partners and has had to cope with the influx of millions of desperate Zimbabweans. Mbeki's desperate attempts to defend Mugabe earned him the contempt of Tony Blair and doomed NIPAD. It was lose-lose. Which makes one wonder about the Aziz Pahad lectures. True, Aziz loyally played his part in all these failures and exhausted initiatives, but there really isn't much to celebrate, let alone commemorate. Mbeki quotes a series of American assessments that there is an increasing threat of Islamic terrorism in Africa. He then turned to the subject of multipolarity, citing an eclectic set of authorities all agreeing that the post-World War II world order, both economic and political, is over, as is the brief unipolar moment of the 1990s when America ruled supreme. Instead, we not only have a large number of major powers, but an ever-growing number of rising powers. Thus, the benign multilateral world order of the Pax Americana is giving way to a far more complex and confusing situation.
For more of Johnson's sharp insights and access to commentary from SA's top thought leaders, join BizNews Premium. From the dusty streets of Philippstown in the Northern Cape comes a homegrown tradition revving up community pride. Artist and organizer K3 told BizNews journalist Linda van Tilburg how the Drukkar Grand Prix, now in its 15th year, is giving local children a moment in the spotlight and how she's working to grow the project into something much bigger.
The Drukkar Grand Prix has been running for 15 years, since 2010. And it was born out of a need to do something for the community. There's a lot of social problems, and we found that we can maybe give the children a bit of fun once a year. It started very small, And I think there was 10 participants and 7 organizers at the first event. But it's grown tremendously. And weird enough, we've always had some sort of a media attention. The kids love it, of course. And it means a lot for them to be seen. I think that's the main input that the Draadkar is making. They get seen. And for someone who's maybe a fifth child in a poor family and troubles at school, it's great to know once a year I am a participant in a great thing. And even if I win or not, I will get some sort of a gift and something to eat. So I think it's very small, but it's great to see right from the beginning of the year, the kids make their own cars and they run, they practice all the streets. We are preparing a space. You need a space for, you know, headquarters to do workshops and some art lessons, dancing lessons. At the moment, the kids dance in the street when they practice. So the headquarters is something that we are working on. And then we are trying to find facilitators for the different things. It's dancing, different kinds of dancing, fashion design to help the kids make their own clothes. Boys are also welcome. And some basic engineering skills. We also plan to do robotics some other time. But that's going to take computers and electronical devices. Imagine a Draadkar on its own engine, something like that.
And that's it for today's briefing. Until next time, cheerio.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.